You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. And we are here with Chris, who you can find at SkateXEdge. Damien will not be joining us this week, but be sure he will be back soon. Our number one for the week is The Violent. This was Christopher's pick, and this is on Image by Ed Brisson. Nailed it.
Brisson, whatever.
Over-under for the week was going to be banned T-shirts. What? So, just to throw this out there really quick, if anyone has any ideas for over-under that you want us to tell you, you know, our opinions on, feel free to tweet us or Facebook us at facebook.com/thecomicroast. And last but not least, don't forget to go check out reviewandroast.com, where we review movies, TV shows, comic books, regular books, board games, video games, and pretty soon we're going to review your face. So, and underwear. That's, I like boxer briefs. Brian likes tidy whiteys. I don't know why.
No,
it's
like,
weird. Chris likes leopard print thongs. And with that being said, let's start the show.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Have to admit, I kind of read, let's see, I read The Violent, and that's about it. I played some video games, and then I slept most of my Sunday away because I felt terrible. And I did a lot of site work on Saturday, so I have slacked more than I ever have this week. So I will hand it over to Brian.
Sweet. Yeah, I don't...
Swish.
No, I did some site work Monday and Tuesday. I have a lot of things I'm going to mention throughout the show, but as far as reading goes, I have two and a movie that I'm going to mention. On the positive side, I think I'm the only one reading Max Landis's Superman American Alien miniseries, I'm assuming.
You are correct.
I bought and read issue 3, and so far it's the best of the three. It's all a series of shorts about Clark Kent as a guy. You do not see him ever in this, at least so far, and from what Max Landis says, you won't. He essentially calls this the anti-All-Star Superman, where this is Clark Kent doing random things as Clark Kent. So there's one where he goes to a birthday party on a yacht, and everybody thinks he's Bruce Wayne, but he's really not. But Bruce Wayne's off in the Far East training with the League of Assassins, so he's like, okay, I guess they think I'm Bruce Wayne. So he just gets drunk and says, hey, I'm Bruce Wayne, awesome. And like all these women keep hitting on him like, oh my God, Bruce Wayne, you're the best. Actually pretty awesome. So far this series has been pretty excellent. Plus when you listen to Max Landis like describe his enthusiasm for Superman, it makes you want to like Superman even if you don't, but I do, so it's pretty easy to like. Second one on Dark Horse, I guess it's the sequel to the Kickstarter-funded book she did like a year ago. Gail Simone has a new book on Dark Horse called Surviving Megalopolis. Oh my God, it's terrible. Like, she's losing me so fast right now, it's not even funny. Like, if you thought Clean Room was just okay or a little eh...
Clean Room's actually getting better.
Okay. All I know is the first issue, and I'm apparently alone in this because I read some reviews, and they're like, this is really good. It's god-awful. It is so bad, I wanted to cry. I was like, this... Just the her language in this thing is so juvenile, it's hard to believe it's her. It's all these superhero characters she made up. Like, one character looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon. Another creature is a ripoff of Elastic Man. Then there's a Southern hillbilly woman dressed like Little Debbie, and her name's Southern Belle. I have no idea what their powers are, nor do I even care, because the book is written so poorly, and it's drawn okay. And like I've said this before, like these let's make up new superhero things. are more missed than hit. Every once in a while, somebody comes up with a cool idea. Like that Huck seemed kind of interesting.
That thing is awesome.
And that Jupiter's Legacy looks kind of interesting. I haven't checked that out yet. And Mark Wade's Incorruptible looks pretty good, but this is a dud. If oh my god, don't buy it. It's so bad. I want to cry.
You don't even want to marry her anymore.
No, I'd still marry her, but I seriously hate this book. Right, like I shouldn't say I hate it. I like the way it looks. I just don't like the way it's written. Lastly, finally watched The Martian, and it's pretty good. There you go.
I actually read a bunch of stuff. Let me see. I read... What the hell is this? Hold on. It was like drooled on something. Weird. Okay. I read Old Man Logan. This is the reason why I don't like superhero comic books anymore. And this is by Jeff Lemire, too. So I had actually some really good expectations for it, being that it was, an old man Wolverine. So I just figured that he was just, would drive real slow on the road and, just yell at kids, for like walking on his lawn and stuff like that. But it's kind of boring. It doesn't really go anywhere. It's like the sounds art like, in it is actually really good, but like
sounds like my kind of book.
He said, I mean,
check
not
it out,
way.
But I'll read it again. But like it says parental advisory. There was no F-bombs of any kind. There was no swearing whatsoever. There's no anything. I don't. There's nothing in here that, like, I don't know why it deemed like why it got that rating.
When those first start coming out, I was pretty like on the edge of buying them, but I never actually did. Now I'm kind of glad I didn't.
I'm bummed. I'm like, the artwork's good, but like, and I was like, dude, I'm like Jeff Lemire doing Wolverine, like a dirty, like a dirty old man Wolverine. But just like, just an old Wolverine. And it's like, and don't go based on what IGN says, because IGN masturbates to Marvel. So it's not that great.
I generally never read anyone else's reviews before I.
But then, Southern Bastards 13 came out and I read that and it like made my day. So
nice.
Because Southern Bastards rules. I got caught up on like just Paper Girl number 4, Legacy of Luther Strode number 4, American Monster number 1 by Brian Azzarello. He's finally redeemed himself with me. This is actually really good, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was awesome. I would recommend it. I liked it a lot.
I thought about it.
A disfigured war veteran comes home, and he's just pissed. He's pissed. It's awesome.
This guy doesn't like anything unless somebody's pissed.
No, I mean it's written really well. It's it's not like, I liked it. I enjoyed the story. I'm interested to see where it goes.
I was interested.
Up to you. You want to get it, get it. You don't, I don't care.
Oh my god, I have your permission to not get it? Thanks.
And I got caught up with the Black Hood. Awesome.
Yeah, I didn't even know they kept putting that out.
What, Black Hood?
Yeah.
You stopped getting them?
Apparently, yeah.
Well, that's your loss.
I'll have to survive somehow, I guess.
The Evolution by Rick Remender, that was really cool. The Hangman number 2, awesomely satanic.
That's Huck. Out.
Yeah, Hangman number 2 came out like a week ago. It was awesome. That thing's rad. Huck, I really like Huck. That's a really good book. It's about the and Postal. Postal number 9 came out. That thing is awesome too. Postal and Huck were like my standouts for this week. And American Monster. Those were really good books. Huck I would definitely get. It's awesome. It's, you know, if anyone knows or doesn't know, it's about a superhero, but he's kind of a selfless superhero. He's more of a superhero that just kind of does like little odd end jobs around the neighborhood because he could do them so fast. Like mow people, like he'll mow like the whole neighborhood's lawn.
Yeah, wish that was for real around here.
What?
Wish that was for real around here.
I know. He goes and paints everyone's house like when they're sleeping. He does little stuff like that, but it's cool. I like it. And like now he's like kind of getting to be a big deal. And like in this last issue, they put him up in a hotel. The governor puts him up in a hotel. And the governor like of his city that he lives in is kind of trying to like kind of use him, I guess, to his advantage so he can get voted in again or whatever. So he has him, you know, like standing by his side. You know, he's at like this dinner party or whatever, and they put him up in a hotel for free, and he gets whatever he wants. Huck goes and takes his hotel card and gives it to two bums and says, "Go here. You can stay here. I'm going home. Order whatever you want." I thought that was hilarious when he did that. He gave it to two bums on the street and goes, "Here, you guys can sleep in my hotel room." They're like, "Why?" "I'd rather sleep at home." "You can order whatever you want. It's all been paid for." And like some like hot chick like comes up to him like at the party and like goes, "Hey, I'm in room 242. He's like, "Okay." But those are really good. That and Postal, both really good. Those were my two standouts for this week.
So, do you remember enough about the first issue of The Violent to not spoil issue two for the rest of us? Or,
dude, that is like my favorite one right now.
Saying, when you start going through number one, you're going to stop after number one, correct? You're not going to start.
I will stop. I won't go into number two.
Okay. Well, then, you might as well lead us right into our number one for the week, which was The Violent.
By Ed Brisson, which I'd like to mention. I did not even realize this. I don't know what he did, but his name is credited on Pisces.
For real?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, I guess you got to have a dud here and there.
I don't even know if that's good enough to be a dud. Like,
yeah, I mean, that was an abomination, really.
More like a flood. No, that doesn't
no,
work.
No, it was an abomination is what that was. But whatever. I mean, now with The Violent, I think anyone that is a parent or an uncle, anyone that has nieces or nephews, grandchildren, or anything could read this and just, I guess, I don't want to say relate to it, but just
feel for the character.
Yes. I don't think I've ever felt for a character so much in a comic book as I do in this one as I was reading it. I think this one was written extremely well. And it's not – he's not reinventing the wheel, and it's not a new – it's not like this new story. I mean, this kind of theme has been used in movies and stories before, so it's nothing new, okay?
Right.
But I don't know what it is, but the way he wrote it, like, I'm reading it, and I'm, like, sitting here reading it. I'm like, "You mother, stupid motherfucker, how could you fucking do that? How?" And then at the same time, like, towards the end, I'm like, dude, I'm like, "Oh, he was just in there for, like, 10 minutes. I'm like, "Yeah, he's a moron." I feel bad because he does care about his child, but at the same time, it's like, dude, if you care about your child, why the fuck are you doing shit like this? Why are you going to the fucking park across the street to have a smoke? "Well, she's sleeping, honey."
Yeah.
It's like, I seriously wanted to get in the book and fucking strangle this dong.
Yeah, it was definitely the mullet head.
Yeah, but at the same time, he cares, and it's like, oh, that's, you know, he's, you know, he seems like he's an okay dad, and I don't know, and like, The artwork was I think the artwork was drawn really well. I think the story to me kind of has that Brubaker feel to it. And as you're reading it, Mason is the character, is the father that seems to be kind of flighty with his parental duties or whatnot. But I mean, you could, I mean, I think anyone could relate to how they are. I mean, the family's struggling with money. He goes to try to get groceries. He can't fucking pay for them, so he goes and steals them. This kid chases him. He punches him. Groceries get ruined. He's fuck. Throws it in the garbage. Comes home. Wife's like, "Where the hell are the groceries?" Oh, I mean, anyone that's married can relate to that too. It was just, I don't know. I'm trying to put my finger on it, like how to really explain it to people. But it's just a story about a guy who he cares about his daughter, but his views on being a dad are kind of miscued, and it looks like he's being pulled from both ends, from his family, trying to be a good dad, trying to make money, you know, so they have food to eat. He's got a friend that he's trying to help that obviously needs some help and calls him, and he's like, "Hey, can you come get me? I so-and-so left. I'm drunk. Dude, I can't. I'm here with my daughter. Please, dude. Please, please, please. All right, fine." So he gets his daughter dressed up, and he goes in to go get this guy. Ends up having a drink. I don't know how long he's in there, but he's in there for a half an hour. I'm reading it. I'm like, dude, why didn't you just bring her in with you?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing.
You just brought her in with you. I never leave my son in anywhere.
Well, it's not like you're running out to the bar a lot, too, you know.
That's true, too. But and let me give you this. He's got a criminal background, and then, as it turns out, so does his wife.
Oh, yeah, they were both, like, you know, petty criminals, except he got caught. They were also right, and they were also junkies.
And they're trying to turn their lives around.
Right.
But then they keep getting sucked back in somehow. They're like, you know, they get these little like temptations, like his wife's going to work and like this old dealer comes by and like, "Hey, you know what? If you still want to blah 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 blah, here's my card."
Right. Here's some free drugs.
She goes to work. She gets her check. They fucked up her check. How am I going to pay for this? How am I going to pay for that? I don't know. How did you feel when you read it? Did you not feel bad for them, or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, like I said, it's basically about, you know, two people who, you know, once upon a time, you know, were a couple of junkies, couple of, you know, small
time. And they're
trying
to turn their lives around because they have a family. They have a 3-year-old daughter. And it's right. Like, it's like they keep hitting these bumps in the road.
Right. You know, and, you know, he did a year in prison. She waited for him. And they're, like you said, they're trying to get their life back on track. And it's just nothing seems to be going right. And the whole time, like, yeah, right. You know, you feel bad for him. And you can totally, you know, empathize with that. Because, like, who doesn't fall on times like that? I mean, not that I was ever a junkie. But, I mean, there's always times when I'm like,
totally,
dude, how am I going to pay rent?
This is shit that goes on every day in some part of this, you know, city, state, world, country, wherever.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I've had my fair share of times when I'm like, I got to find some stuff to sell so that I can pay rent this month.
Well, right,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, anyone has gone through that before, you know? So, I mean, that's the thing I think I like about this story is that you didn't have to be a junkie or a criminal or anything like that to actually, like, yeah, empathize with these people. You feel bad for them. They're trying to turn their lives around. They're trying to. And, yeah. Like, it's like they keep getting, like, it's like, yeah, nothing's going their way. It's like they can't even keep their head above water.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if the book is going to go in this direction or even touch on the subject of, you know, prison in general, but, like, bottom line is, at least in this country and probably most other countries, but like prison is, you're just, you're taking somebody who, you know, needs help more, you know, more or less, and you're marking them for life and ruining them even more because, let's face it, prison is not the rehabilitation that it's supposed to be. It's people are in there, and instead of bettering their lives to come out and, you know, form back into society, they go in there and they have to struggle just to survive it, and then they come back out. And now there's all these rules on you have to stay here, but, you know, and nobody wants to hire you, so it makes it even harder. So they turn back to crime, and then you throw in the whole fact that corporations own prisons now, so they can have cheap labor by using prison labor. It's like, you know, no matter what happens, when you put somebody in jail, you basically are ruining their lives, you know? So yeah. I don't know if they're going to touch on that in this at all. I'm hoping that they kind of do make some kind of a statement about that kind of stuff, because that's where my mind was going after I read it. And I was like, man, this is, you know, you can see that, like you said, he's trying to do the right thing, but he's kind of an idiot at the same time.
Right.
You know, he works during the day. His wife works at night. They're splitting duties between the kid. And it's just not easy when, you know, he's fresh out of prison and, you know, he's trying to get acclimated back into society with a terrible moving job, you know?
Right.
Nailed it.
Brian.
Nailed it. Yes.
What do you think?
I'm a little torn in a weird way. I think going in, I was expecting it to be more noirish, and it's really not.
I think it is, actually.
I don't get that whatsoever. I mean, the crime element's there, but the noir element's not there at all, I don't feel. That said, when I'm reading it, I'm like, yeah, this is all right. I'm like, it's, you know, it's not bad. But then when I got to the end and I read the afterword from Ed Brisson about what inspired the story, did anyone else read that?
No.
No, that's the thing I didn't read.
That's what hooked me. He goes on this long thing about, he's like, I was born in Canada. I have spent the greater part of my adult life in Vancouver. I love Vancouver. I also hate it. And he goes on this long thing about how Vancouver, I forget what he said, it's like called Hollywood North, some people refer to it as. He goes on this thing as, he goes, I'm a comic book writer. He goes, I make an okay living doing this. And he goes, and I love what I do and I wouldn't trade it for the world. He goes, I also have a wife and kids. And he goes, I live in a city that has some of the best elements of anywhere in the entire country of Canada and also has some of the poorest people in the entire country as well, some of the worst unemployment and some of the most desolate areas. And he goes on to say that while certain parts of the city of Vancouver are getting ignored, other parts are getting bought up cheap and turned into luxury condos that no one can afford. And he says, meanwhile, people like himself are getting pushed further and further and further out of the city limits by the fact that they can't afford to live there anymore. And he goes, there's going to come a day, and he goes, and I fear it's coming sooner than I want, that Vancouver is going to price me out of the market, and I'm going to be living somewhere that I'm not particularly happy. And he's basically saying that as corporations continue to overtake cities and all these hedge funds continue to take over properties and just jack the rents and the real estate prices up, it's another tool to essentially assault the middle class with a lifestyle they can never have anymore. And he said it all. He was also going on, it's like the homogenization of culture. It's ruining any sort of relevance for big cities. And he said Vancouver, that he knew, was disappearing. And it got me to thinking about Chicago. And I was like, when I remember we were talking about it a few months ago, and I said, I go into the city now, and everybody wanted to move into the city because, oh, the small shops and all the cool clubs and everything. Everything I saw was Chipotle, Potbelly, Hot Whole Foods, Walgreens, banks everywhere, and blonde white girls jogging at night. down streets and neighborhoods that, you know, were quote unquote dangerous 20 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, the culture of Chicago is disappearing. And his whole thing in the back of this book was essentially saying the same thing's happening in Vancouver. And then today on the way to work, I'm listening to Joe Rogan's podcast, and he's got Judah Friedlander on. And Judah Friedlander's like, yeah, he's like, New York was so great in the 80s and 90s. And then Giuliani moved in. He enacted this old 1800s law about lewd acts, and it basically drove the porno stores and strip clubs out of the city altogether. And now it's all, you know, Chili's and Disney store this. And he goes, New York is, he goes, the financial people have taken it over. He goes, the only strip clubs that are left in New York City are so high end, only Wall Street people can afford to go. So they've almost become exclusive to people who have tons of money. And he's essentially said that New York, same thing, the culture of the city is being wiped out for all these rich white people to move in so they can be close to work. And he was essentially saying, you know, all the people that think New York's the greatest city on earth, he goes, it's becoming a financial city with banks and Walgreens on every street corner. He goes, all the things that made New York great in the 80s and 90s and even in the 70s is all gone or fast disappearing. And then I'm reading here in the paper today, the Double Door is probably going to be closing because the real estate in Wicker Park is so sought after and so expensive. Now the owner of the building can make way more money just selling it to a property developer than allowing for the Double Door to stay open. And I looked at the thing. The Double Door is paying like $23,000 a month to stay open.
That doesn't even make sense.
And the owner of the building feels the rent is too low to make
There's
it worth
no
his while.
There's no way the Double Door makes that kind of money.
If you do shows 7 nights a week, you can make that kind of money. Why do you think ticket prices are so crazy high right now? You got to pay that rent. So that's what I got from the book. Once I read that article and I started thinking about all the, like I said, how cities are just being overrun with rich people who are just driving everyone out. And then they want to sit here and talk about like, oh, blah, 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 pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, these people are making it harder and harder for people to even exist, let alone pull themselves by any semblance of bootstraps. And then I started to go, okay, on the surface, the violent, and I went on a long tangent, so I apologize. On the surface, the violent was just good, not great. But when you throw that extra undercurrent of class warfare, I guess is the most generic way to throw it, to put it out there, it made the book far more intriguing for me. And now I'm like, okay, now I got to see this through to the end. I have to, because now I know where his inspiration's coming from. That makes the book far more interesting for me, because I mean the title makes almost no sense,
right?
So far,
because yeah, well,
so,
I'm saying,
yeah, so far.
I'm, when you're telling me it's the,
we don't know if Mason's gonna just, you know, fucking snap and...
Right, and then and that's the thing. Like, people love to nitpick and pigeonhole people for their behavior, but when you give them very limited resources with which to survive, like, what do you anticipate's going to happen? That's what I'm saying. That made this book far more fascinating, and I'm like, okay, I don't know how far he plans to go with this. I don't know how much deeper he plans to go in terms of where I'm seeing it go in terms of the whole addressing class warfare and income inequality. And like Scott said, the whole you come out of prison, even if you go in with a minor felony, you come out a prisoner, and to the working world, to employers out there, you who went in for minor petty theft are no better than the guy who murdered 5 people. You both came out of the same prison. You are on equal footing, like below the poverty line, and don't expect to ever get a job that's going to be worth your while or it's going to pay well, because you're marked for life.
Right.
And then again, and then you have people who want to just sit here and go, well, if you just blah, blah, blah. Well, if you get caught up in the dragnet, guilty, not guilty, suspicion, doesn't matter, it can ruin your life. And that, again, I don't want to keep going, but that made this book super fascinating, and now I have to see it through to the end. So,
oh, I definitely want to see it through the end. I thought the characters, how he written them, were really, really written very well.
Yeah, and like I said, once that undercurrent was thrown underneath the story itself, I was like, I could relate to this way in a much stronger way than I could just reading it.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make. There are a lot of aspects in this comic that are very relatable to a broad spectrum of people in different settings and different times of their lives.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I go down to the city now and it's unrecognizable to me. I'm like, I don't even know this place anymore. It looks just like Schaumburg or any other crappy suburb that I live around now. And I'm like, why am I going to move to a place where I'm going to pay crazy rent for a much smaller living space just so I can walk to Chipotle instead of drive my car there? Not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure if you ask anybody who's in and or around another major city where white people are invading by the thousands, they'll tell you the same story.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying here is kill Whitey. No, I'm kidding. Or am I? I better stop.
It's a very good book. I think it's a very good book. I love the art in it. I love how it was drawn. Not very bright. There are colors in it. There's a lot of colors. But everything's kind of dulled down. The art was kind of, to me, it was kind of reminiscent of a little bit of Sean Phillips and Sean Murphy, to me at least. And I did get that noir kind of aspect from it. Maybe, you know, you said you didn't, but I did. But whatever, two different people. But like I said before, this book has. See, we just proved right there that this book could actually relate to a bunch of people in different times and settings of their lives. You know, whether they're single or married with children, and you know, I think there's something in here, and especially the way that he wrote those characters. It's a total love-hate relationship with those characters. Especially the main character, Mason.
Right.
Seriously wanted to go in there and slap the shit out of him. Like, dude, what the fuck is going on with you? And at the same time, I'm like, I almost kind of felt bad for him and wanted to help him out.
Yeah, I was way more sympathetic in that. I felt like, I don't know what this guy did, but he's never going to get ahead. And that's not really fair.
Right. And he doesn't seem like a bad guy, but the way Ed Brisson did it, if that was what he was aiming for, I think he nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know enough about the guy at this point, but I feel that it's something. I don't know. I'm gonna keep going for sure.
Oh, I did, and I don't want to say it too much, but when you read the second issue. And I want to touch up on this part. There's a part, I'll just tell you, his daughter is with his grandma right now, his wife's mother. And the police come to ask her some questions. And then as the policeman's going, she tells the policeman, can you please, find my, you know, find, well, they can't find his wife now, too. But she goes, can you please find my daughter, Mason's wife? I can't take care of my granddaughter. And the way she says it like she's like she. The way she says it is like basically saying to the policeman, she's a burden. Okay? I can't. I don't have the space for her. I basically don't want her here. And then, like, the artist. Pretty much, and then after that, the next panel, the cop is just looking at the grandmother like, "You're a fucking piece of shit." And there's no quote or no nothing. It's just the way the artist drew that cop, his facial expression. He's just looking at the grandmother like, "You are such a cunt."
Okay, that's harsh. The grandmother probably has a very tragic backstory.
But then I felt so bad for the little girl. It's like.
Read it for ourselves.
Two fucking criminal parents who can't get their shit together. or trying to, and then she's got this shitty grandmother. She's only three.
Well, it's easy to judge and point fingers like that. I mean, it's a story. I mean, whatever.
True.
Point is, it, like I said, that sort of neglect
that
is
shit,
systemic.
But that shit
of,
happens in real life, though.
That sort of
right
neglect
now,
is...
Right now, there is some kid that has two shitty parents and a, you know, and a family that doesn't give a fuck about them.
That's what I was trying to say, is that sort of neglect is systemic of years and decades and generations of bad parenting, and who knows where it all gestates from. So, I mean, I don't... I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just saying that that...
Right.
I don't know. Anyway, we should move on, so let's number this and wrap it up. B.
8.75.
8.9184653 to the third power.
9.
I'm actually...
Giving it a 9.
For the first issue, I'm going to stick with a 7. Because, like I said, it wasn't until I read his afterword that really I felt more hooked in than I did from the story itself. But I feel like now I want to see how he develops this going forward. So
7.5. Okay. Done and done. That was a long segment.
Well, I kind of rambled like a maniac for a minute.
Okay, so next we have what will be the next big storytelling technique in comic books? Is this something you came up with, Mr. Brian?
Or I didn't come up with it. I found it on comic
book
resources.
You know what I mean. But you put it on here, so I'm assuming you have read it.
Well, the art, did you? I'm taking it you didn't read the
I
article.
Skipped to the other one and read the next one.
All right, I don't know what the heck the next one is.
Well, why don't you enlighten us on this one?
It was this. Whoever wrote this was explaining how comics have gotten more creative panel-wise, and they've stripped out a lot of the unnecessary exposition and some of the dialogue to make for a more cinematic and streamlined storytelling process. And they said, you know, these stories are now written for arcs and for trades, not so much for... They said back in the 70s and 80s, they would write these super long, you know, panels that would explain, like, in a city, blah, 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 and this guy did this, and blah, 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 and, you know, giant thought bubbles and giant long speeches about this, that, and the other. And I said they've kind of narrowed the story down to a more, I don't know how to explain it, maybe more relatable.
They're letting the artwork do most of the storytelling.
That's what he was kind of saying. He's like, before, like, they would use all this exposition to explain the panel to you, whereas now they're letting the artwork. Because, like, the thought I've always had is, you know, the artwork describes the action, so therefore you don't necessarily need someone to go, he punched left, and then he came with a right hook, and he did a kick, and then a backflip, and blah, 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 and all you see is just some guy in some crazy pose. Just as one example, they're saying that, like, comics have taken cues from television and movies and stripped out some of the unnecessary elements, and as a result, comics have gotten exponentially better. And as a result of that, people are starting to notice. And people who may not have read comics before are maybe being introduced to something now and going, oh, wait, this is pretty good. I thought this stuff was all cheesy. And they're like, well, yeah, go back 30, 40 years. And like, yeah, it kind of was a little cheesy. Depends on your taste, I suppose. But the point is, like, the person that wrote this was explaining, like, how comics have evolved to where they are now, and then started speculating on maybe what's coming, how they'll evolve from here. And I just thought maybe we could figure out or think of some ways that maybe that would happen.
I think it's pretty clear, honestly. I mean, there's already, obviously, digital comics. There's already certain panels in Marvel Comics where you can just scan them with your phone and it'll bring up more information on the Marvel app.
Yeah, but I think this article's talking more about, like, plot.
Yeah, storytelling, not so much like how comics will evolve as a
Well,
technical medium.
Well, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand, because now that you have more and more people reading them digitally, you can have animated panels. Then you can have even less of the explanations. You know, they got rid of some of the explanations and did it with the artwork. Now they can evolve on that more and have, like I said, like animated panels or, you know, little, not videos per se.
You
know
what
I mean?
A good artist.
Almost like a GIF as a panel.
Right. Well, a good artist can tell the story with very few words. One comic book that I can think of right now that I would just totally got lost and couldn't tell who the hell was who was Undertow on a Image about a year and a half ago. I couldn't tell who the fuck was who, and I was like, dude, everyone looks the fucking same in here. What the shit?
That, I really liked the first issue of that, and it quickly lost me because of the same thing. Like, characters seem to, like, blend together in weird color choices, and just...
It was hard to tell who was who, and who was saying what.
Yeah, and after a while, it was hard to tell what the story was even trying to say, and I'm sure somebody out there was reading it and loving every minute of it. I personally got bored and I got rid of it. So Roche Limit's another one. But I mean, that's kind of was just not really that great of a story, I don't think.
Well, I think the first was pretty good.
I don't honestly remember it. I remember forcing myself to finish Clandestiny, and then when I did, I was like, yeah, I think I'm done with Roche Limit now.
that was the second arc.
Not quite as bad as Umbral. Umbral was really bad.
I can't remember the last fucking dud I read. Well, besides Old Man Logan.
But reading this, I was thinking of, like, different ways to do action, and I've seen some choices that I didn't particularly care for, but one comic that I actually didn't really love, I barely even got past disliking it, but it had one really amazing page of action. It was that Clandestino, where it had all the action sequences mapped out in the shape of a six shooter, or like a 9mm or something like that. So all the different little action beats were all spelled out in the shape of this gun, and it was essentially a gunfight in a convenience store, which I thought was a really interesting choice. And I was like, man, it's too bad this story is not as interesting as this page is, because this page is just gorgeous to look at. Another one was Gotham After Midnight. There's a scene of an old, creepy-looking house where all the panels fit inside the shape of this haunted house, and then there's, like, a thing on the outside. It's just... I should take a picture of it and post it, because it's just... one of those artistic choices that I'm like, God, I wish I could come up with something like that, because that is super intriguing to look at. Even those kind of choices are like one of those things, like if you marry this with a really good story, not that Gotham After Midnight's bad, but it's not as good as I was hoping it would be, but irrelevant. Or another one, Intersect, was the one I didn't really like, but I just thought the way that the dialogue, or I guess the story, flowed, it was just an interesting way to lay it all out. And that's the sort of thing I think that's going to start.
Yeah, he hand-painted those all, like, in watercolor. That thing looks awesome. And I was going to make a point that I think, actually, I get the feeling, like, maybe, you know, ever since, I would probably say at the beginning of 2015, last year, I think a lot of the writers are probably coming up with writer's block, because it looks like they're trying to come up with stories, and they're trying to be these real deep and weird and introspective stories. Like, example, Nameless. That's just one example of, like, where the hell was that thing going? Like, it seems like he was trying to put in a whole bunch of shit, or just try to be really complex. And, like, I think our review of The Violent just goes to show you that less is more.
I think it just depends on... the
idea. Well, if you can do
execution.
It, then great. But, I mean, don't, you know, don't try and come up with this weird-ass story that's going to have all these twists and turns, and then, like, because if you take too many twists and turns in your story, sooner or later you're going to fucking lose your way. And you're going to get lost. Go in a city that you've never been to, drive around and just keep taking a left, then a right, then a left, then a right, then a left, then a right. You're going to be fucking lost.
Wait, and then a left and a right?
You know what I'm saying.
Anyway.
Whatever. But that's the point I'm trying to make, is like, if you keep adding all these twists and, you know, to your plot, eventually your story gets all muddy and like you kind of just, your story just kind of gets lost in this pile of twists and turns that you're taking.
So more twists and turns is what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is I think they need to go back to some simplicity. Simplify your story a little bit. You don't need to have all these twists and turns. I like, here's another example, Clean Room. I like Clean Room. That's, luckily Gail Simone isn't taking too many twists in that one. But I would say that first issue was kind of like, okay, well, where the hell is this going? Is Astrid, are you satanic or what? I don't get it. I'm starting to get it now, and it's starting to become a little bit clear. But that's the thing that's the vibe that I get from some of these writers, is like it feels like sometimes they're like they're kind of having a writer's block and they don't know really what to write about, and they come up with this idea, and it just ends up getting all losing the reader.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm just bringing up those two examples. Those are the two that come to mind right now. Is like Nameless, but and Clean Room. Though Clean Room isn't as bad as Nameless. Where Nameless just, I don't even know where the hell that went.
Right to the discount bin.
Exactly. Well, what did you feel about Nameless? Did you know where it was going?
I said a million times on the show, I gave up on that one after issue three. So.
Okay. But
it wasn't even a matter of knowing where it was going or not. I just didn't like it. I didn't care. I'd like by the issue, okay, by the end of issue three,
because you got lost.
I didn't really feel like I was lost necessarily as much as I was just like, I just didn't care anymore.
Oh, I got lost.
I mean, if I was to really think back, I probably would say, yeah, it was a little confusing, but it wasn't confusing in a way where I was like, I want to unpack this and figure it out. It was confusing until like, yeah, I don't care enough to even keep going.
Well, that's how I am with it. I'm like, I was confused where I'm like, I don't give a shit anymore.
Anyway.
Yeah, so I still think the future is animated panels. Nailed it. So I'm sure we all remember the lovely group of 1 Million Moms, I believe is their stupid name. Because they're always trying to boycott everything that's fun because they're stupid.
Moms.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. If you don't like it, don't watch it. Don't look at it. Don't listen to it. Quit trying to ruin everybody else's fun. They're now boycotting and shouting out on the social mediaverse to boycott Olive Garden for advertising during the first episode of Lucifer, because they're trying to say that Satan is a cool dude and this is wrong and you shouldn't eat their pasta. Well, that just gonna mean there's more room at Olive Garden and I don't have to wait 45 minutes to sit down now. We don't like that, so no one else should like that. You know what? If you don't like it, don't watch it. It's that simple.
Here it is.
Bottom line is,
they're all white.
Did anybody?
I guarantee you that they're all white.
Great. That's neat. Did anybody watch Lucifer, or was I the only
one?
No.
Oh, you watched it?
Yeah, we watched it yesterday.
Oh, okay. No, I did watch it.
I kind of liked it. I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't as good as the comic that we just read, but it was pretty close. Like, I kind of digging it.
Okay.
You didn't like it?
I hated it.
Wow.
I absolutely fucking hated
well,
it.
Well, you read the older comics, so you have higher expectations, apparently.
We're talking about Lucifer.
Here's the okay, let me...
Well, if you didn't watch it, you can't even comment.
Let me just say, I've read some comments from people who I won't name recently who are once again complaining about, I'm so sick of these comic book adaptations, movies, blah, blah, blah. And again, if you don't like it, don't watch it. It's fine. No one's going to cry. We'll all get out, get on in life. But I don't understand, first of all, why anyone thought putting Lucifer on network television was a good idea because of this. If you put Lucifer on AMC or FX,
right,
it wouldn't have gotten anywhere near the amount of attention, and they probably could have done a better and more proper adaptation of it. I was very reticent to watch it to begin with.
I think you went in wanting to hate it.
No, because I actually like the guy playing Lucifer, and I think his talent and his version of this character is being wasted on a terrible show.
That's the one thing I've read that was positive about it. Everyone says that he actually plays that part pretty well.
First of all, Mazikeen, who never gets referred to in the show, she is the bartender, which she never was in the comic, which is fine. But she doesn't have the half mask, which was a huge part of her character. She is also a demon. And the guy that plays Amandiel is so boring for me. But the first 10 minutes, I was like, okay, this is actually kind of good. And then it turned into, ooh, kooky Lucifer is going to help the cops solve murders every week. And I was like,
I don't know if it's going to be every week.
People, reviewers who have seen like the first four or five episodes literally said it might as well be called CSI Lucifer. And they actually said that the shows get worse every week, which I believe. And all I'm saying is, I get it. You don't want to do a... And here's the thing. The original Mike Carey series, Lucifer is maybe in like every five issues. It's all about these stories of other people that he knows or that have had run-ins with him, and the whole book was about giving in to one's inclinations and how he weaves in and out of these stories. I mean, one minute it's like a story about a girl who's going to school in London and blah, 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 blah. And the next minute it's this dark fantasy, and the next minute he's back in Los Angeles and it's him again. And it's always a series of short mini arcs. They all tie together. And this, like, when I saw the guy playing him, I'm like, this guy is perfect for this character. But they've taken all the things that made the comic so unbelievably good and stripped them all away. Because their thought was, ooh, if we put it on Fox, maybe we can appeal to bored housewives. And that should not have ever been the target audience, because guess what? Bored housewives are the 1 million moms who are crying and whining about this. You picked the wrong audience to aim for. That's the problem I have with the show. I mean, if they would have never said it was adapted from the comic, you'd probably be like, oh, it's a quirky little cop show with a weird demon character. Ooh. But
spooky.
If this show goes up in flames, no pun intended.
I think it was intended.
They'll never try to readapt this again.
It's going to go up in flames just like Constantine did.
Right, because the comic is popular-ish among certain types of people, but it's not Batman. You can flub a Batman adaptation, put it away for a few years, and try again. You can flub an Iron Man now and try again. You can flub Arrow and try again. If this fails, that's it. You'll never see this again.
I don't know why they thought that they could take something that the whole world has been probably one of the most feared
right.
things in the world amongst believers or non-believers and try to make him TV show acceptable.
Well, what did you like about that? You just like the character? Because I agree, the guy playing Lucifer is great. I will say that much.
Well, again, I didn't go in with any... The only Lucifer I ever read was the number one we did 2 weeks ago. And I feel it's kind of close-ish to that. But I also didn't read what everyone else in the world read. I didn't read about what the rest of the season's about. All I know is the one episode I saw. And I thought it was kind of good. I don't know that it's going to turn into CSI Lucifer. I had no clue. I just figured, oh, here's some girl who sold her soul to the devil to, you know, be the next Miley Cyrus or whatever. He's friends with her and tries to say, well, you made a lot of those decisions on your own. Oh, boom, she gets shot in the street. He's trying to find her killer to, you know, get Lucifer justice. That's all I know. I don't know that he's about to get, you know, deputized and become, you know, donut guy for Wednesdays. Like, I don't know all
that. Now, see, if they had spent the entire season trying to solve who killed her, maybe that would have been more intriguing. Give you a hook for it every week to keep coming back. But it's more along the lines of, ooh, this police work is fun and wacky. I want to do it all the time.
See, well, again, I had no clue that that's what it was going to turn into. And if that's what it is, well, I mean, I'm not going to watch anyway because I don't have cable.
It's on Fox.
Yeah, I can't record it, so I'm not going to sit down every Monday at 6:30 or whatever the hell it's on to watch it. It ain't going to happen.
How did you watch it yesterday?
The pilots are always free on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
So I watched the pilot on Amazon, but, you know, unless I start going to Mike's house to watch the rest of them, it ain't going to happen.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, God forbid Fox and CBS put out apps where you can actually watch their shows. I mean, I can go to Fox.com and watch it, but then I got to, like, go through the hassle of turning on the computer, waiting for everything to update, and then closing iTunes every 5 minutes when it pops up. Ooh, do you want to update me? No, I fucking don't. I'm trying to watch TV.
Somebody's getting upset over here.
Well, because that's how I watch Supergirl, and, you know, sometimes it gets annoying. That's why I stopped watching The Flash and Gotham, because it got annoying every other day to have to turn on a computer, wait for updates this, go to CBS.com, meanwhile, my dinner's getting cold, you know. It's a lot easier when it's all right there on the TV. It's annoying when you got to do it through a computer. It can be done, but you got to have, you know, more patience than me to do it.
Right. All I'm saying is that the people from Fox Television should have thought this one through a little more and said, this is better suited for cable.
All they were thinking is comic books are huge. We're going to make money. Nailed it. That's all they thought about.
Right, but they could have still, I think they could have done this on FX or FXX, and they probably could have just
Constantine on? It was on Channel 2, right?
Channel 5.
Oh, whatever.
Whatever, they're all the same at this point. That's when, like, people at work are telling me, oh, you got to watch this show. I'm like, oh, what channel? Oh, it's on Channel 7. Like, yeah, ain't going to happen. Well, why not? Because it's network TV. Like, I'm sorry. When the shit hits the fan and they go, oh, poppycock. Like that, you just took me right out of it.
Right. Lucifer should have been on cable.
Well, I'm not saying it shouldn't have.
Right, but, back to back with Preacher.
Now that worries me because I don't know if I like the guy that's
playing. Here's the perfect reason why. Well, A, the guy that's playing Jesse Custer is the same guy that plays Howard Stark on Agent Carter, so I have no problem with that because that guy rules. But also, if you put Preacher and Lucifer back-to-back on AMC, now you have the cable landscape with which to do it properly, but also two Vertigo books back-to-back, Sunday night. Take that, Walking Dead.
Yeah, and you can call it the Satan Hour.
Could have called it something. It would definitely... I so think that this show would have benefited from being on cable.
At this point, every show would benefit from being on cable.
I just hate to see that this just fall off the map and fizzle away. It's never to be heard from again.
I could be wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, prime time, you can get away with almost anything you can get away with on cable outside of nudity, but they choose not to because they have to appease to the advertisers.
They want Zoloft to advertise, I know.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's their own fault that they are sucking. Just saying.
Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast.
Probably not loud enough to get picked up, but that's okay.
Anyway, we can move on.
Yeah, we need to move on. This is running way too long for this week. So, over-under was banned t-shirts. Overrated for me right off the bat. And this is hard to say because they're like, you know, obviously like I grew up with them still, like I can put them on almost any time. But once they got back together with Michael Graves or whatever the hell that moron's name is, anything Misfits related went down the toilet. No shirts can be worn. No, I feel sorry for anybody who got the Crimson Ghost tattoo, because now that's what you have to deal with. Anything outside of the music from, you know, the 70s, 80s maybe, no, it's all done. You can't even wear a Misfits shirt anymore, or you're just going to look like a moron. Sorry.
Honestly, what almost kind of ruined, almost kind of ruined the Crimson Ghost for me was when I was in Buffalo, we found the Crimson Ghost movie serial collection. There's 12. It was like, you know, they did like the Green Hornet and Superman, Batman back in the 40s. They're like little 8-minute movies. They're all crunched into one big story. They did one for a character called the Crimson Ghost, and it's that zap, boom, pow, you know, stupid supervillain. It's super hilarious and awesome, but totally ruins the mystique. Because you grow up and you see the skull and you're like, what is that? You're thinking like some cult or some weird, you know, Nosferatu looking thing. And then you find out it's just some wacky college professor in a mask. You're like, oh, dude, the mystique is dead. But it's awesome on a different level. And I saw it one other time at Suncoast Video, and I kick myself whenever I think about it for not buying it, because it's
probably on Netflix or something.
If it is, it's got to be
watched. I'm
just saying,
bottom line is, once Michael Graves picked up the microphone, anything visually relating to the Misfits is no longer valid.
It's pretty much ruined at this point. I agree. All right, well, now I can leave my alternate aside and go with my main pick. It's a shirt I actually admit that at one time in my life I wanted, but because of a certain word on it, it was kind of like in the gray area, or like, I don't know if mom's going to like this. And now I've seen it so many times over the years, and it's lost all of its meaning for so many reasons. That's Metallica's Metal Up Your Ass t-shirt.
Oh.
I wanted that thing so bad in sixth grade.
Oh, yeah.
Seventh grade, probably still. Eighth grade, probably starting to lose a little interest. But now, you see someone wearing it now, and you're like, oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, because they're terrible.
It'd be like wearing it. It'd be like Miley Cyrus wearing an Iron Maiden shirt. It's just like, that doesn't make any sense.
She's a huge metal fan.
I'm just saying.
No, I'm kidding.
You always see like the weird celebrity woman with the Iron Maiden Fear of the Dark shirt, and you're like, you just bought that 5 minutes before they snapped your photo.
Your publicist came out, put this on. You look super cool.
Like Lady Gaga pretending she's a big fan of Judas Priest. It's like, no, you're not. Just stop. Just be mildly attractive and sing your weird Christmas songs with Tony Bennett and just move on.
Oh, man. I'm going to say all the victory shirts that ever came out.
And now my alternate's been picked, so bully. I had one specific one, but, you know, I agree.
Which one?
The first run of Earth Crisis t-shirts that came out when they first got on Victory, with, like, the crappy Flame logo that encompassed the entire front of the shirt.
Oh,
everyone,
yeah,
on planet Earth owned it.
I didn't.
Scott did not own it. But everyone else on planet Earth, I would go with, like, the weirdest places and see somebody with that Earth Crisis t-shirt on smoking a cigarette, which I was like, what? Now I don't care. But
yeah, it'd be the Firestorm cover. It was like a cream off white, right?
No, the shirt I'm thinking of, they made a blue version and a black version, and it just said really big in flame font, Earth Crisis, with the Victory Bulldog on both sleeves. And I think the Victory Bulldog
on the back.
Because, yeah, you needed the Victory Records logo everywhere possible. Because everybody had to know. That's who owns the band.
Just like the Only the Strong comp shirt from the first comp. It was a white shirt. I had that shirt. It was like one of my first shirts. Victory on a sleeve. Victory Bulldogs on the other sleeve. Victory big-ass Bulldog in the back. And then the cover of the Only the Strong comp, but it says Victory Records and just the cover. All right, awesome, dude. I'm a fucking walking ad for Victory Records. Sweet.
But you wore the shit out of it.
Yeah, for the first time, yeah.
Let's see. Underrated is a shirt I've actually recently acquired. It is the Ghost t-shirt that looks like the cover of Jaws, but it's just got like the top of his head with the hat, and it says Papa across the top, and it looks like the Jaws cover.
When did you get this?
I got it for Christmas.
Where was I?
On the couch?
Who got it for you?
I think it was Mom or Leslie.
That's awesome.
One of the two. Either my mom or my
sister. I need to see this thing.
Dude, I wore it like 3 days in a row.
Don't tell people you wear the same shirt 3 days in a row.
Well, I come home from work and put on a shirt for 3 hours. I'm not ready to wash it yet.
All right. I was actually going to say the one you're wearing, but that's not a band shirt.
No way, dude. My Suspiria shirt's the best.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree.
I know, because when I bought it and didn't, well, I didn't tell you till after we left the con and you were mad. I remember.
I'm still a little upset. Mine is a shirt that I saw once in a video. I almost bought it online, but I balked and I didn't get it. Still wish I would have done it, though. It's an old, like, first album Danzig shirt. It's got a, it says on the front of the shirt in the red font, the Danzig logo, and underneath it is a painting of a demon, probably the devil, actually. And it's like the cartoon devil, not like the Lucifer devil, but more the cheesy cartoon one, choking Jesus. And there's blood coming out of the eyes. And on the back, it just says, God doesn't like it. Probably the most blasphemous T-shirt ever made. And I'm so mad I never got it because I always loved that shirt.
Today's the day in the eyes of God shirt is pretty blasphemous, too.
Yeah.
I have that shirt still.
I have the long sleeve.
But the Danzig demon choking Jesus T-shirt is the one I wish I would have bought all these years.
I do like that In the Eyes of God shirt with that big floating Jesus head with horns on it.
Is that your underrated then?
No, but that is a pretty cool shirt. I don't have so much an underrated as I do a shirt that I wish I would have had.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of it. Actually, there's actually a couple of Slayer shirts that I wish I had.
Now be the time we hear that music that goes and we'll have like a little thing that says, "Please wait while we technical."
I was like the one with the gorilla with the Nazi helmet on. That's like the Satanic Reichmit.
Wehrmacht.
Yeah, on the back.
This guy's always got Nazis and like all kinds of violent stuff.
And the one that had the war ensemble one with the skull. With the Nazi helmet on, and the whole skull is made out of like missiles and bullets, and I like the one with the Nazi eagle on it.
I'm trying to think which one that was. Is that one from Seasons in the Abyss?
Yeah, those are all like basically from Seasons in the Abyss era Slayer, like between South of Heaven and Seasons in the Abyss.
Sweet. Well then. It looks like we're moving on to best thing ever. Even though I haven't won, or I didn't win.
The lottery.
We finally broke out Merchant of Venus again last weekend, and it was super fun. So that will be my best thing ever, because I had a pretty slow week.
Righteous.
Right?
Quite righteous.
Mine is Baskets.
Nailed it.
Yes, the new Zach Galifianakis show on FXX. It's created by Zach Galifianakis, Louis C.K., and Tim and Eric from Dr. Steve Brule. When you watch the show tonally, you can tell it's from that group of guys because it's super dark, black comedy. It's about Zach Galifianakis plays a guy named, I swear to God, his name is Chip Baskets. And he goes to France to clown college. But he doesn't know how to speak French, so when he's in class, the instructors are talking and the classmates are talking, and he's going, yeah, I don't understand what you're saying. So he gets kicked out of clown college, but for some reason, he's hanging out with this super attractive French woman who wants to go to California really bad. So she says, she even tells him, he asks her to marry him. And she's like, yeah, I think you're a loser, and I'm not attracted to you at all, and I don't like what this is. And she does, like, the circle with the hand around his face and torso area. But she's like, I really want to go to California and meet a rich guy. So, yeah, fine. But she's like, just let you know, I'm not going to, like, sleep with you or touch you or be next to you ever or live with you. And he's like, yeah, I don't care. I just want you to marry me. So, anyway, he goes back to California with his new wife. and he tries to become a clown, and the only job he can get is a rodeo clown in, like, Bakersfield, which is, according to the show, kind of a white trash, somewhat, I don't know, hickish area of California, maybe, at least according to the show. This show is so depressingly hilarious. I cried from laughing multiple times. This, I was like, kind of on the fences. I'm like, I like Zach Galifianakis, but he's kind of been doing like these jock humor kind of movies of late, and I don't know, maybe he's not going to do the old Zach Galifianakis. This fits perfectly with his style of humor. I don't know if you like Zach Galifianakis, but good lord, this show's hilarious. So many just sad, hilarious moments. And then the best part, well, you know how he does, like, the character of, like, his, the ambiguously, you know, his ambiguous brother who's very straight-laced, and he plays a version of that character named Dale Baskets. So Chip and Dale, get it? Woo!
Yeah.
Dale Baskets owns Baskets Career College, and he does this super hilarious, cheesy commercial advertising for his career college and all the different degree programs you can enter. He goes to, she's like, we got to go to my mom's house. I got to borrow $40 so I can pay for my wife to have HBO. They walk in the house. His mom is Louis Anderson. Louis Anderson makes no effort to look like a female at all. He looks like just, he looks like himself in a terrible wig. The wig's not even on straight. He's got this muumuu on, and he doesn't try to change his voice. He's like, hey guys, how's it going? This show is so weird. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. I laughed so hard so many times.
And is it a half hour?
Yes.
It's, I don't, like, have to watch it now.
It's like a perfect show. You remember, like, the first time when Louis first came on FX, and we're like, this is, like, the greatest thing I've ever seen, because it's, like, super hilarious.
See, this just doesn't make sense to me. Like, Zach Galifianakis working with Tim and Eric, I get it. Throwing Louis C.K. in the mix, they don't seem
but
like...
But they all have a really dark sense of humor, and it totally... It's like if you took the dark kind of introspective parts of Louis and mixed it with the super bizarre, like, undercurrent of Dr. Steve Brule, it's... And just picture Zach Galifianakis as a rodeo clown making $8 an hour. His wife's like, why don't you get the real job? He's like, what, you want me to go apply at Arby's? Is that what that is? Just so many amazing parts. This show is like the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. I cannot recommend Baskets enough. People need to watch this, because if it gets canceled, I am going to cry.
I'll get your tissues ready.
Get boxes of them, because this show is the best thing Zach Galifianakis, it might be the best thing he's ever done. I've only seen one episode, but it was a super good episode. So
I'll have to check that out. I know you guys probably don't care, but that's fine. I happen to like them, but I like Pig Destroyer. And Relapse went and repressed Terrifier and Phantom Limb, and I was actually able to get Phantom Limb. So,
all right.
Well, because they had sold out in Terrifier, but that doesn't matter if they already have it. But I was gonna grab one anyways, in Terrifier, but they were like all gone. So I got pissed. But I was actually able to get Phantom Limb, which I don't even have. So it works out even better because I don't need another copy of something I already know. So that's my best thing for this week.
Well, alrighty then. There you have it. That is our show for the week. As always, you can find me on Twitter at XHorsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. And you can find Chris at SkateXEdge. You can also find Damian at Damian Johnston. Even though he's not with us today, he will be back shortly. And we will see you next week.
You are now leading the world of Musings of a Geek podcast network. Stay geeky, my friends.